Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
Who are you? Let me just ask you that again. Who are you? In your industry, a bozo on the bus just like the rest of us? Are you a seeker? Do you know that you are a spark of God? Of a good relationship with intentions and goals is keeping in mind that the primary aim of setting and working towards those goals is to feel the way you want to feel. The external things we want to have and do and experience, those are your secondary goals, all of which will get you back to the whole cosmic point, experiencing your core desired feelings. Underpinning of manifestation.
This is a prayer to humanity, a calling out to the world, to embrace the love that we are, the love that we are as a whole. One spirit flows through us all, uniting us in a breath, in the wind, the sky, the sea, the earth, the breath of eternity. Together, we can create heaven on earth. We can rise on the wings of angels. We are free. Feel the divine presence. This is heaven on earth. Believe it. Step into the freedom. See the vision. Be the vision. Eternity is now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. That was Marla Maples. Donald Trump's second wife. Did you hear that one? A prayer for humanity. Must be quite an interesting journey to end up being a former wife of an individual that's taking over the world by storm. And prior to that, we had the fortune of listening to Daniel Laporte, Desire is Divine. And I'm glad that you could take the time to join us here today. Each day is a valuable day to be grateful for being alive, to be grateful for having a second chance, another chance to be the best that you can. But I think also the most important opportunity we have every day is to maintain curiosity. Curiosity to find out more about what is it that lives inside of you. And what is it that our humanity is unfolding from within themselves? We're seeing so many things. In the last 2 years, the narratives of intriguing stories have quadrupled in such a way that we really don't know what to do. And I suggest you basically turn everything off and turn inwards. We are in the age of an inward journey, an inward reflection, a reprioritizing of who you are, what you are, why you're here. And to come from the answer that emerges naturally from your place of silence, something extremely authentic. It'll take you some time, because when you throw up all of what you've known up in the air, what's going to fall that you can catch just might be what you need to be taking with you. Don't touch the dial. I'm going to be having a heart-to-heart with Dr. Diane Hamilton. Let me take this time to introduce Dr. Diane Hamilton. She's an award-winning speaker, nationally syndicated radio host, author, and educator. She is the author of 3 books, including It's Not You, It's Your Personality. And she's a certified emotional intelligence and Myers-Briggs instructor. Dr. Hamilton's extensive experience includes working in multiple industries, and she is the former MBA program chair at the Forbes School of Business and has taught more than 1,000 business courses. Top companies, including Forbes, have hired her to speak to improve employee relationships, increase engagement, improve productivity, and the reduction of conflict. Today we welcome Dr. Diane Hamilton on the air. Hello.
Hello, Sister Jenna. Thank you so much for having me here.
Well, you know, I wanted to get right into this conversation. I've been dying to talk with you. So here is after we go through all the who, what, why, when, and where, okay, let's just, major question I have for you. How do you get everyone on the same page in a company? I mean, that's been a big question for me.
That is a big question. And I don't know if you get everyone on the exact same page, but you can build a culture that, you know, is inclusive. And that takes starting at the top. And there's so many speakers, so many authors, so much content about this, because it's a very big challenge that corporations face. And I think it's really important to realize that everybody's unique. So not everybody's going to think exactly the same way about anything, because we have our own backgrounds and our own experiences. But we can share common goals and we can share common visions. And that's what the most important thing is that we need to talk about when we talk about corporate culture. And I think that a lot of companies neglect to share those goals with people. I think a lot of people don't really know what their daily job is in terms of how it ties into the overall goals of the organization, and that's one big step towards everybody getting on the same page.
Now, a lot of people, they go in for a job interview, and the main premise is getting a paycheck because I got a mortgage, health insurance,
right.
I have children, mm-hmm. maybe I have to pay alimony. And that has become a very, very large influence in the consciousness of people's motives and intentions. And then I find like the purpose and the meaning and all of that comes much later. But there's a very high percentage of people in jobs that they really don't like. And so that whole intentional vibration in itself is a drainage on the company's productivity. And I always feel that isn't it so important that, you know, is there something that you can tell folks in a company, listen, guys, if you thrive, if you make this company shine, if you make this project the best, you're going to get promoted. You're going to get higher pay. You're going to be here longer. Your job is guaranteed. And for some reason, that is there. But there are times in which there's something sitting in the soul of people that they're just not that motivated anymore.
Well, I think that that's a really important point. A lot of what I studied in terms of curiosity was to address those issues that you're talking about there. We have a lot of people that perhaps are in the wrong jobs. They don't have great alignment with what they'd really love to do or what they even know. Many of them don't even know what they would love to do. And they're just kind of existing. They're going to work for the paycheck, like you say. And I think a lot of it ties into having conversations. I mean, we hear so much about millennials wanting to make an impact and, you know, wanting to have more feedback. And I think as the generations change, we're seeing more of that need. And I think that a lot of people just really have interest in, or could have potential interest in, great innovative focuses within the company if people found out more about what interests them. And I think that it all comes determining the things that interest us or why things have not interested us in the past. And that's why I created a curiosity assessment to determine the factors that hold us back from being curious.
I think sometimes we're afraid of being curious because it might test us to actually amplify our game, do you think?
Well, one of the, you know, there's four factors that I found really impact curiosity, and the first one was fear. You know, a lot of people have problems with being afraid of what'll happen if I do this, right? Will I listen? Will somebody think I'm not good enough? Will I fail? Will I, you know, there's a lot of fear-based issues that hold people back. And actually, the four things I found that really hold people back are fear, our assumptions. Maybe we think we won't like something, or it's boring, or whatever our thought process is. We haven't really opened our mind up to it. Or our technology. Sometimes technology has done things for us, or we have a problem with learning it. Or an environment, just the way we grew up. The people around us, maybe teachers didn't have time to teach what they, you know, what we were really interested in because they had to teach to the test or other issues like that. Parents, you know, weren't open to the ideas that maybe we were interested in pursuing. So I think that there's a lot of factors. Yeah. And what I found really is I worked for a long time to create this assessment to give people a baseline to kind of open your mind to these are the things that are holding you back from being curious or being, you know, which means leading to success. And these are very important areas. If you talk to any of the top CEOs, they all are very, very curious, very successful people want to know more about different, you know, factors out there. And if you can just grow that natural curiosity in people that maybe got just put back on the back burner for a while due to life, I think that you can really lead to some of the most important things that companies are trying to improve. You mentioned culture, a lot of the things like engagement, as a productivity, innovation. We're going to hear so much more about innovation now, that these are all things that are tied into, if you improve curiosity, you improve all those.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because your fear, assumption, technology, environment, I can get an acronym out of that called FATE, which is like if
right.
you live that through, uh-huh. it's like, that's it. There's no more living for you. All right. So uh-huh. let's get to your personal story. Tell us a little bit about your travel, your journey, especially about emotion intelligence, which is an area that you've really investigated a lot. And why has it been so important for you particularly?
Well, I was—I have quite a diverse amount of experience of different areas, but I was in sales for many, many years, and then I transferred more into education-based training. I mean, I still taught sales, I still taught marketing, HR, and different aspects of business as I progressed. But as I went back for more and more education, I started being interested in what makes people successful. And when I wrote my dissertation, I wrote it on emotional intelligence and its impact on sales performance. I was curious what makes salespeople successful. And emotional intelligence really wasn't that big of a topic at the time. It was starting to get to be big, but it wasn't what it is now. And I hadn't really known too much about emotional intelligence. And as soon as I stumbled onto it, I became very interested in what it was and how important it was. And Daniel Goldman had written his famous book about, you know, why it can matter more than IQ at that time. And so I researched emotional intelligence, and I did find quite a bit of correlation with sales success, which wasn't surprising to me. But I studied different groups and had done quite a bit of peer-reviewed research in emotional intelligence in different areas of personality. And that led to my interest in just understanding the things that make us tick. You know, personality assessments interested me. I mm-hmm. became certified and to give different types of personality tests. And so when I wrote my book on personality, I actually wrote that with my daughter, and it mm-hmm. was about the different assessments you can use in the workplace. And because I think DISC and MBTI and all the tests that they use in the workplace kind of give you a little bit of an interesting picture about what makes you tick. And they're all self-assessments, which is kind of interesting because you've got your own perspective thrown into the mix. And it kind of can be good and bad, but I think that it's good because you have a baseline of knowing this is kind of who I am. And I think importantly, what I learned from this is what other people are. I think it's really kind of easier to understand yourself, but to understand mm-hmm. how somebody else thinks and how they behave, I think that understanding personality assessment was really important for that. For example, if you're an introvert, you may not appreciate all the what it means to be an extrovert and vice versa. You learn what helps someone else behave in their best, brightest way if you understand what it is that is, you know, their preferences. So
right.
what are their preferences, I should say. So it's very interesting to me to look at some of these things. And all of that led to my interest in this curiosity assessment because I was looking at some of the assessments out there, and there really isn't anything that measures what holds you back from curiosity. And there's some that'll tell you if you are curious, not, you know, that type of thing. But there's nothing like this, and that fascinated me. And I think it all kind of ties in with all the soft skills and all the training, you know, emotional intelligence, all these things all fall into
sure.
that area. And you hear so many organization forums, you go to different meetings, everybody talks about how people are hired for their knowledge but fired for their behaviors. And so I think it's
right.
really important to focus on those behaviors and understand soft skills.
Well, especially what we're seeing today, the communication that we are witnessing in this generation is not like what I knew growing up. I almost feel like poor kids of today, they're being trained to think that if I'm not aggressive and forceful, I can't get my message across. And the humble, quiet, clear, honest communicator almost seems like they're getting drowned out. But yet, isn't that the most effective form of communication? Because it breeds trust, it breeds some quality of relationship, it breeds so many positive things. And yet the climate that we're in, the emotional climate that we're in, is a very, very aggressive one. How would you speak to that right now, especially in the workplace, in leadership, in families?
Well, you bring up several very interesting points. I wanted to first address what you were saying about poor kids and what they're learning and what they, you know, what's the reality out there. I've had people on my show. The CEO of Europe was on my show, which is a great organization that teaches the poor areas. They go to different areas and they help people with a year of training to get them the skills they need to communicate well, to get a job, to do different things. And I think that there's more and more organizations that are trying to help people who really haven't had that kind of training to get to a level where you learn the correct things that are going to help you be successful. And I think books like Susan Cain's Quiet was an important book because it focused on some of the skills that maybe we weren't traditionally taught were so great, to be introverted, to be quieter, to be, you know, to listen, to communicate in a different way. And Susan's book it hit a nerve with so many people because she made some great points about it's not always the extrovert, it's not always one type of person that you need on teams, that you need in society. I mean, we're all going to be different. What I learned a lot from teaching teams, maybe giving, you know, like the Myers-Briggs or different personality assessments, when you divide people based on their personality types, if you put all the same type of personality that all communicate the same way into one group, the end product that they produce is far less interesting than if you put a diverse group that have different personality traits together. So it's not that we need one type of personality. You know, we just need to improve the personality that we have and, you know, to work on the skills that we have and to communicate and understand what the other person needs.
Now, let's go back to the earlier part of the conversation because you did stress the importance of leadership. What if leadership is the problem? What if leadership isn't communicating well? What if leadership isn't set in the right tone? What if the leadership lies? What if the leadership is very biased about its understanding and really doesn't care about the rest of the company? How do you speak to that? Because those books, to me, they work well for everyone under leadership.
Right.
Is there any book out there where the whole staff can say, hey, leader, can you please read this book?
Well, no, it's so funny because I ask that question of so many people on my show because that's such an important question. It really is.
What?
I mean, there's great books. You could read Stephen Covey's books. You can read all these books. I mean, you know, there's so many great leadership training materials out there. But the point is, if the leader doesn't recognize that it's important, you're kind of out of luck with that group because it has to come from the top. And I've worked in situations like that. Will surround themselves with yes men or women that tell them what they want to hear. And if you get in that situation, unless the leader sees the need for change, unless they've had problems with the board or whatever it is that gets them to the point where they're seeing the sales go down, they're seeing issues, and that they accept that they need to start at the top, it's very difficult to make any changes. They're not going to listen to people from below, as they may look at it, to them.
So let me jump in here, because what if that's the case? What if you're in a job with that kind of leadership? What if you're in a country with that kind of a leadership? What do you do?
Well, I mean, in a country, there's voting, there's, you know, the political system, you can go and get your voice heard. In a company, it's very challenging. Some companies do have surveys, yearly surveys in different aspects that people can make comments. But, you know, I worked for a company for 20 years. They surveyed us every year and never once told us that they used anything from that survey, ever. You know, so you don't know if they are. And so the communication was not great. They could have been using it, and they should have been telling what they're using from it, but they didn't. So that was a mistake, even if they used the content. So it's not an easy question to answer because it really is the kind of thing that if the leader doesn't recognize it, what will happen is they'll find out through getting some of these issues of where they get removed because they're doing things that are inappropriate. And we're seeing a lot of that in the news these days. And with, you know, a lot of lights being shed with the Me Too movement, with, you know, ethics cases coming up, that I think that's probably having more impact than anything else on these people who maybe are doing some of the same things. They're seeing there are ramifications.
Yeah, I'm glad you shared that honestly, because I do know that some folks just, you know, they either want to create a revolution or all they do is talk about how bad leadership is, or versus, you know, there's something that we've got to do to fix ourselves, because the more you speak about the negativity of the leadership, you also inherit the same things that, you know, is really affecting you very deeply. Mm-hmm. I want to move on to work ethics. There's a difference that you're seeing in the workplace between millennials and baby boomers in terms of work ethics. Could you share what that is?
Well, you know, there's a lot of attention to the amount of hours and time that millennials, what time they want to be at work, what time they want to go home from work. And sometimes that's interpreted in a way that they're not working as hard or as, you know, many hours or whatever. And I think that that could be really misinterpreted, because I think that they have just a different way of the way they like to work. Maybe they do a few hours in the morning before they even get to work, or they do something at night. You know, it's the same kind of thinking that boomers had, where you had to take your punch card and put it in that clock that clicked, and then, you know, you're in and then you leave at a specific time. It's changing. And since a lot of people were in the workplace at that time, and they, you know, that was so ingrained in them that meant that you care about your job because you're there at certain hours and certain times. It's not the same as it is today. And to me, the way you would base how well somebody does is not really the number of hours, but what they've accomplished. And there's a difference between just being there and being there being productive. And sometimes you can see people that maybe spend more hours in the office who really don't do anything. They're just putting in their time, right? So I think work ethics is changing. When I teach a lot of courses that are based around ethics, and ethics is such a fascinating course to teach because it's so subjective. And what's ethical in one country is not ethical in another, and based on, and maybe from one area of the country, it changes to another area of the country. And from each company, they each have their code of ethics. And if you read the code of ethics that Enron had, it sounded really good if you read it, but no one was living it. But, you know, you can have a code of ethics, but if you don't really pursue what you say, if you don't walk the walk, you know, you have to not only share your code of ethics, but, you know, you live it and be the person who demonstrates it from the top on down. And I think that we're seeing a lot of ethics issues because that wasn't happening. And I remember writing a blog a long time ago where I shared all the code of ethics from some of the top companies. And it's interesting to see how people share their codes of ethics with their people within the organization. I had to work for a company once where we had to memorize the code of ethics, kind of their mission statement combination, but it was about 3 pages long, and we had to memorize it word. We couldn't
You're
deviate.
Kidding me. That's worse than being on a plane and having the stewardess telling you, okay, ladies and gentlemen, make sure your seatbelts are fastened.
Right. Here's how you fasten your belt. Right.
Right.
But they videotaped us and made sure that we could say it was, you know, it was something, though, that made it very clear of what they're, you know, what they expected. So I have to give them that they really, there was no question of what they, you know, what they believed in and what their code was.
Wow, wonderful. Well, that's incredible information. And I think that there's a lot of work to be done. I feel there is a need for our souls to come into corporations, our soul awareness, the essence of the spirit, the deep quality of our spirits to really come into business, to come into the workplace, because it's becoming such a, it's rough in the ring right now. And I feel that people are feeling that they have to do whatever at whatever cost to survive. And I believe if we keep creating that kind of culture, our kids have no hope, that there's no sustainability left for us, that there's nothing to sustain, because that's a kind of energy that basically destroys, doesn't co-create or sustain.
Well, I think that you're seeing a stronger focus on millennials wanting to get away from that. And I saw a lot of more of that with probably the boomer generation, because it was more of a Mad Men time, right? So we have a little bit more of a change in terms of, the biggest change I've seen is that they're allowing, I can't say the biggest change, but one of the biggest changes I've seen is that failure is no longer looked at in the negative, like there's just, you can't fail or you're just gone kind of mentality. I think they're looking at some of the things like failure as positive learning experiences now. And I like seeing that. I know it's rough in the ring, and the way you put it, I understand what you're saying. But I think mm-hmm. that if you're saying you want soul awareness in organizations, I think that there used to be more soul-crushing criticism in the past for if you failed, you know. And I think that there's, in a lot of the meetings, I go to a lot of Forbes summits and different events where we get, you know, I'm on the board of advisors at DocuSign, and some where you're just getting around some of the top CEOs in the world, and you hear such more open-minded ways of looking at what have we learned from this, where I never heard in the past. So I'm more optimistic. I really am. I think
I'm glad
that
to hear that.
I think it, you know, it ties into what I'm trying to do with the curiosity factor, as far as mostly if you look at the fear issue, a lot of that was fear of failure, fear of looking dumb, fear of saying something wrong. I mean, we've all been in meetings, we want to ask a question, but you don't want to ask because you think you're going to look like, you know, there's something wrong, you weren't paying attention, or you don't want to look bad, right? And
right.
I think that people are, that's one of the things I'm trying to change is, you know, there's no dumb question. We need to learn to embrace that people have, you know, a need to understand why and to use that information. And when people can just ask questions in a more open way that they don't fear the ramifications, I think that that's huge. And if people know that if they make a mistake that, you know, they're going to have, you know, not going to lose their job, they might actually learn something from it.
Right.
Because how are you ever going to get innovative if you don't really focus on the things that drive innovation, and which asking questions.
I agree. Thank you for that clarity. Let's talk about your radio show, Take the Lead. How do you become interested in doing a radio show, and what types of guests are you having on your show? Would you ever have someone like me talking about how to be more peaceful in the workplace?
You can be on my show any day you Yes, I have. Yeah, that's so funny. I got interested in my radio show because I was interviewing a lot of very successful people as part of my job at the Forbes School of Business, because I was working with people that were on the board of advisors or on their speaker program and different things I was doing. So interviewing, you know, billionaire Ken Fisher or you know, just the different John Tamney's editor at Forbes, different people like that. It was so interesting to me to be around really top individuals who had done such amazing things that when I left that job, I thought, well, I really loved interviewing, that I would probably just do more speaking and interviewing. And as I was doing my speaking and trying to get more focus on that, I was having other people who interviewed me, similar shows to this, you know, people ask you to be on the show and, you know, you have more of that mm-hmm. type of thing to meet people. But one of the first people who interviewed me at that point had a nationally syndicated radio show, and I thought, well, that would be great to do that. I really liked what I was doing, so I continued doing it. And some of the people I've had on my show, I mean, I've had, you know, a lot of C-suite executives at Time Magazine's Most Influential. You get a lot of Forbes 30 Under 30s, Nobel Peace Prize. Now, I've had so many billionaires, really fascinating people from Craigslist, the just, you know, different names that you might not think. Keith Kroc, the billionaire behind DocuSign, you know, Steve Forbes, people like that really are impactful. But so many great women that have done amazing things. I mean, I've had, you know, people that have started companies that I would say there's still probably a balance of, it's pretty close though, of female to male people on the show who have done things that every time I talk to someone, I'm like, wow, that's just such a cool thing that you've done. You know, it's so interesting.
Right.
And I really find most of the topics just so, even if they're out and, you know, kind of the fringe of
easy.
Leadership.
Right.
And they do. And I think what you're talking about here is it's all the same type of thing. You're trying to be successful in your life, in your personal life, whether it's work or work-life balance, all that ties in.
Well, look, congratulations for the work that you're doing, and I'm wishing you continuous success. And is there anything coming up lately that you need us to know about? And leave us with a website for more information. And I would love to have you back on air. We need to talk more about this whole thing on mindset and curiosity and, you know, just building healthy companies.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, I'd love to talk to you about that. Right now, the biggest thing that I'm working on is I created the Curiosity Code Index, which goes along with my new book that's coming out, Cracking the Curiosity Code. And they'll both be available at curiositycode.com. It's not out yet, but it's coming out soon. And also, my main website is drdianehamilton.com. So that's just DR for Dr. Diane Hamilton, all one word. And I can be found on all the social media sites at Dr. Diane Hamilton.
Wonderful. Diane, thank you so much. It's been an absolute delight. Have a remarkable, remarkable rest of your life.
Well, thank you, Sister Jen. I really enjoyed being on the show, and this was so much fun. It's very interesting.
Yeah, me too. I had a great time. You take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So listen to what Dr. Hamilton left us with, everyone. If there's fear, assumption, even questions about technology, environment, there'll be some issues here. And when I broke it down, it's fate. If you have these energies working through you, how are you really going to move forward to be able to succeed in your work, in your workplace, in the company? All these things are breaking down communication, breaking down your ability to soar. If you are a supervisor, a manager of a team, all of this energy is what's going to create like less productivity and less success. And definitely if you're a leader, you know, keep moving forward, leaders. We want you to think about the benefit of the whole. We know that everyone thinks differently. Everyone comes with their own gifts and specialities. It doesn't mean that they're not good. It just might be that they're just not in the right area. As Diane said, it just might be that they're positioned in a place in the company where maybe that particular area is no longer really useful. And just looking at their strengths, just reroute them. Maybe they're better in the creative department rather than the research department. It just takes a little bit of interest. And I believe that if managers and leaders are willing to really take the time to value their colleagues at work, knowing that if they're happy, the company thrives, that it just might perhaps become a game changer and a great model for our future generation to look into. Thank you for joining us on America Meditating Radio. Remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And we really are here to love each other the same. Come and join me in Sacramento, California at the Sheraton Grand Hotel, where we'll be speaking on how California can become a game changer. September 20th to 23rd, I'll be there with Marianne Williamson, Michael Beckwith, Mayor Tubbs, and so many more incredible leaders looking at California as the light for our nation. So just go to California Vision 2020, and if you'd like some more information, feel free to send me a tweet, a message, or even email at sisterjenna@americameditating.org. All right, let's end today's show with a nice little song. Hey, you know who I have not heard in a long time? Is Gary White from Dreamweaver. Remember that good oldie? Well, look, take care, everyone. Love you very much. Be at peace. Hi everyone, it's Sister Jenna. You've been listening to America Meditating Radio. I hope you enjoyed this segment, and feel free to share your comments and feedback on our Twitter site, America Meditate, Facebook, America Meditating, and on YouTube and Spotify as well. We hope to continue to amplify, elevate, and enlighten our lives and the entire world. Please be well and take care of yourselves. I'm Sister Jenna. You've been listening to America Meditating Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Did you enjoy that conversation? Because you can also listen to it on Spotify or in iTunes 24/7, anytime, anywhere. I do trust we all have inner power to become our very best. When we listen with curiosity to learn more, we grow. So thanks so much for tuning in, and do be easy on yourself. Take care.